I grew up in the Mormon Church. Born and raised, as they say. Even during the times of inactivity, I still considered myself to be a true believing Mormon. Times and people change, and when someone pushes you to reevaluate your beliefs, you sometimes realize how wrong you were. 2016 was the year I moved from Mormonville to Heathensburg. I'm Molly Ann Mormon. Welcome to Doubting Dogma, where I explore my new views and new friendships, moving on without religious belief. All right, welcome back to Doubting Dogma. This is episode 14. Can't believe we've made it this far. And joining me, our co-host, Riss McCool.
But I don't know what city we're in Pennsylvania now. You've ruined it, Molly.
Well, you left Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but you're still in like Heathens, whatever. It changed every time. But
Heathensburg
now
Township.
Yeah.
Or something.
but now there's nothing, and now I feel empty inside.
It's not nothing. It's just a slight little change.
I don't like change. We fear change.
So do I. That's why it took me so long to leave the church. But anyways.
Touché.
And then special guest today joining us, another Exmo who actually messaged me after listening to Bryce's show, Tank. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Glad to be here. We had a couple of really good conversations there for a little while, and so thought it'd be cool to come on and talk to you.
So wait, you guys call each other Exmos? Like,
yes.
Because the scathing guy is called Muhammad Mo, so I feel like you're saying you're ex-Muhammad, and I'm confused. So Exmo is ex-Mormon, I assume.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, just clarifying that little detail in my dumb brain.
Not dumb. I've heard several different varieties on it. I've heard Exmo. I've heard Foreman, which is a contraction of former Mormon. And then also a contraction of that, I heard FOMO MOMO or some crap like that from somebody else's show. But
what if they participate in NaNoWriMo? Would they be FOMO MOMO NaNoWriMos?
Yeah.
Cool.
That's me.
That's my new job, is coming up with acronyms for people who are former Mormons and current novelists.
2 years in a row now I've participated in NaNo. It's good times.
Yeah, I published mine.
It seems like the only time I can finish a first draft is with the pressure.
Yeah.
But
so, Tank, how you doing?
I'm good. The whole the shortened names and everything like that is... Exmo, I think, works for me. But yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty short, sweet, and to the point.
Yeah.
I gotta ask, were you called Tank when you were a Mormon? Because I have this vision in my head of a Mormon tank with, like, Joseph Smith painted onto the side leading the crusade east. So can you fulfill vision?
No. See, at the top there, you have to have, instead of Joseph Smith, it's got to be Ammon.
Oh,
Ammon was the big hero in the Book of Mormon, you know. destroyed thousands and thousands of people or whatever.
That is what a tank would do.
I said, I don't think this is something we should aspire to, but, you know.
Well, when somebody tries to steal your king's sheep, you got to cut off their arms.
Yeah.
And then take them back.
Yes.
That's right.
And present them to the king.
Violence is good, kids. This is the this is the lesson to be learned.
Yeah, and they battled day and night, and the millions of people died, and whatever else that stupid book said. I'm paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's still traumatized from those passages she had that she read on the show.
I had to stop every minute and go, wait, people take this seriously? Like, what?
Yes.
And it came to pass.
That's
all I gotta say, and it came to pass.
I was gonna invent a drinking game for it, but I was afraid I would die in one page.
Yes.
Well, David Michael actually, I guess, on my Book of Mormon, had the drinking game that you would take a drink every time it said, and it came to pass. And there was one stretch there, one episode, that he had to put a disclaimer saying, I will not be held responsible if you legit get alcohol poisoning for participating this week. I would not advise it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and it came to pass, and then there's the these and thous and thines and everything like that. And I'm like, wasn't this written in like 18th century?
No, it was written in ancient Reformed Egypt.
Yeah. Yeah, but you would think that if Joseph Smith was translating it, he would have translated it into his own vernacular instead of using King James English.
Yeah, except that's what he felt that scriptures needed to be written was King James English, so that's what all of them did.
But he was translating for God, right? So you would think that God would, like, you know, put it into modern language.
Well, but God doesn't like modern stuff.
Oh, that's right.
Okay.
I mean, hence the Westboro Baptist Church.
Ugh.
Yeah.
My buddies.
Ugh. Can I just say, though, that I actually have more respect for them than most Christians, though? Because
they actually follow the book?
They actually follow their book. I mean, from that perspective, I would say that I give them a little bit of props.
Yeah, it's crazy because the ones that are the biggest jackasses are the most fundamental and are the most devout.
Well, yeah, because they're just following what their book says.
Yeah.
Their book says to be an asshole. That's right. You know, that's what it is it says be an asshole.
That must be in one of the footnotes that I never read. I don't know.
Well, no, you kind of have to read between the lines and put the whole big picture together. But generally, it just says be an asshole, you know.
Now, that's a story I can get behind. All the best stories have assholes in them, don't they?
Well, yeah, otherwise there's no conflict, so then there's no plot, so then it's not interesting.
That's right. And it came to pass.
And it came
47
to pass.
Times. Anyways, okay, so Tank, you were in the church.
Yep.
Were you born and raised?
Yes. Yes, I was. I was born and raised in the church. My parents joined a few years before I was born. And, yeah, I was born and raised in Michigan in a tiny little ward. We probably had maybe 300 members or whatever, but yeah, we, totally Mormon from birth. And I was totally into it until I was, about 19.
So what were your, like, do you remember having any of the, cognitive dissonance when it comes to here's the church teachings versus like what you learn at school? 'Cause I remember certain, like, in science class and this kind of stuff, you're like, well, this is what the book says, but this is what the church says, and I would completely compartmentalize it. So I'm like, okay, when I'm at school, I answer the questions like this, but then when I'm at church, I answer the questions like this kind of thing.
Yeah, and I don't remember that bothering me at all.
Yeah, no, it was just, that's how it was.
Yeah, yeah, you kind of just dealt with, okay, this is science in the real world, and then I guess I don't really remember them talking much about science in the church or anything like that. I think that was just kind of, it was more for me as a child, it was more focused on church history and Joseph Smith and all of that stuff. I don't remember a lot of the, like, creationist debate, you know, at all.
Yeah, they never really debated, so far as I know, but I mean they would talk about it sometimes, like in seminary and this kind of stuff. And then I remember, like, when watching, take Star Trek for example, because we used to watch The Next Generation as a family all the time. It was great. But there was one of the episodes, I think it may have been the finale, if I remember right. Like, the whole series finale, and it's the one where, like, there was the split timeline, and there caused some rift and something, and Q was involved, and he takes Picard back to the very beginning of the universe when the first little proteins were about to be formed. And I just remember my dad, like, just shaking his head, like, this is just nonsense and everything like that. So, this is like, yeah, this is how they think, and this is how I was raised to think was, well, that's just, they don't really know what's going on, so they're just making stuff up to try and explain things because they don't want to accept the truth that is the creation. So,
yeah, I think I just kind of like, I don't know. I don't really remember now that whole argument between between the Big Bang theory and creationism. I don't remember that came up very much when I was growing up. I do know that after I left the church and I started really getting into stuff, I was like, okay, yeah, this really doesn't make sense. You know, that the earth is only 6,000 years old or whatever. And, and then it was all created. I got way more into science after I left the church than I ever was when I was in the church, you know. Now I'm fascinated by things like quantum physics and, you know, how the universe has evolved, basically, from the very first moments to where we are today, you know, to this complex, beautiful, you know, universe. And I think that the whole story, if you look at it from a big picture perspective, from the very beginning till now, is so much more beautiful than anything the Bible could come up with.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot more interesting, too. Like, the whole idea that it could, you know, explode into being from something microscopic and become what it is just far more mind-blowing than, you know, this being going, I'm bored, click. Wow, we have a universe.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and that's exactly what how I feel about it is that, you know, it's far more interesting to watch things evolve slowly over time. Than to just think that everything was sort of farted into existence to Family Guy reference, you know.
Yeah, and then I know recently I've been reading a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, I started with, well, I mean, I read a couple books by, you know, the Four Horsemen, and then I branched out and I read The Origin of Species, and I just recently started Why Evolution is True, and I'm like, I just feel like I've been cheated in my education with all this stuff because my parents were so fundamental about it that they had to censor all that out. Like, do you get any of that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, not only did they filter it out, but I filtered it out myself, too, as I was, you know, because I was 16, 17, 18 years old when you're supposed to be getting into science and you're supposed to be like, you know, checking those things out. And instead, you're so focused on, okay, I need to go to seminary and I need to read my Book of Mormon and I need to prepare for my mission. And, you know, I need to know everything that I can about Joseph Smith and his testimony. I need to be able to recite the Pillar of Light from memory, you know, and all of these things in preparation for a mission. And when it came down to it, after high school, after I graduated and I started to question the church, I started reading science books and I started getting more into science. And so I feel like I wasted all those years in high school when I should have been, you know, focusing on those things and figuring out, you know, because like I said, it is far more interesting.
But doesn't it give you more of an appreciation for it, given that you weren't raised in it? Because in my experience, people who were kind of force-fed the bullshit until they were adults and they discover this new world, they tend to have more of an appreciation for the information than someone like me who was just kind of, oh, yeah, evolution, like that's how it happened. Like, I think you get a certain extra bonus with that because it was kept from you, right?
I think so. I mean, I don't have any basis for comparison, really.
I think there's an added fascination, definitely.
Yeah, I do find it much more fascinating than a lot of my friends, you know. But I think that that's because I had to come to it on my own. I had to really study and really, you know, I guess when you're focused on one other thing for so long, the information that you pick up doesn't quite sink in. So as far as like science and things like that go in high school, it didn't sink in for me because I was so focused on my mission and, you know, finding a nice Mormon girl and getting married and having a bunch of kids and, you know, all of that stuff, that I wasn't really focused on science at all.
So, and yeah, what's that difference like in the mindset? Like, because I was never a theist, so I can't really wrap my mind around what it's like to sort of have this information or at least suppress information for a purpose of believing a certain set of, you know, ideas, and then opening yourself to this world and figuring out, like, for both of you, what was that like?
It's angering, and it's also liberating at the same time. Like, it is so frustrating to know that there was this entire world of information right at your fingertips the entire time, and you didn't have it. You didn't know, you know, anything about it. And then to find it, you know, it's exciting because it's like, oh my God, this is so fascinating, so beautiful, and there's much more to this world than just, you know, what's in a 6,000-year-old book or a 200-year-old book.
Yeah, and I think it's just, like, I compartmentalized without even thinking. It was just instinctual. And, and my brain has quit working.
I think one of the things for me is just, you know, when I started to really look into the history of, like, you know, Joseph Smith and the church and where everything came from, as I started to doubt, the more I started to just get angry. That first 2 years out of the church was just anger for me because I was like, you have got to be kidding me. Like, there is so much information that the church suppresses and keeps away from you about the history of the church and about where it came from and about where Joseph got certain things that are key points in the religion. And you just get to the point where you're like, why in the hell would anybody suppress this information?
Well, it's almost like, it sounds really fucking stupid when you put it in certain ways, so we have to try to, you know, corral the story into something that sounds somewhat realistic, right?
Right. Yeah, but, I mean, they're like, it's purposeful obfuscation, you know, is what it comes down to, is there are certain things about the church that the church obviously hides for certain reasons. You know, the whole seer stone and, you know, translating, you never heard anything. You heard about the seer stones, but in my mind,
the Urim and Thummim, not the little magic rock that he carried around with him all the time.
Right. And that's exactly the thing, is that you, in my mind, when those stories were told, I was picturing something totally different than a rock, you know? Because they said it was fastened in a breastplate and blah, 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 and, you know, all this stuff. So you're thinking, like, crystal ball type shit.
Yeah.
But
thinking, like, clear quartz that somehow fastened to it kind of thing.
Exactly. And so then when the pictures of the seer stone are released and you start to hear these stories about, oh, well, okay, he wasn't using, like, a pair of glasses so much as he was using, you know, a rock and a hat. And that's one of those things where you're just like, wait, what?
See, and I must have, well, that must have been during my times of being completely out of touch with the church, because I didn't even hear about that. Like, I had seen that South Park episode, so I had seen the whole, okay, he sticks his face in a hat, and the Book of Mormon was born. But I had always thought that was sarcastic. And then I started listening to Naked Mormonism, and that's when I was like, what? And so I looked it up, and I was like, and then Salt Lake Tribune, and here's this picture of this freaking egg-shaped rock, and they even go into it in this article. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
How is this not crazy national news all over the place? And how does anyone at this point not see this and say this is a complete sham?
It's because they inoculate you against it. When you're when you're growing up, they inoculate you against it by saying, beware of anti-Mormon literature.
Oh, yeah.
Beware of anything that disagrees with the official church account. Okay. So they sit there and they tell you this the entire time you're growing up. So anytime that that information crosses your path, you're then very skeptical about it because you're like, oh, it's just some ex-Mormon that's like trying to, you know, trying to destroy the church. And it's like, well, no, this is the actual account. Like there's and evidence for it.
The pictures of the stone were actually released by the church archives.
Yeah, that's a reason.
By the church. Yeah. So I don't understand.
They're trying to be more transparent, which you can give them a little credit for.
Not much, though.
No, not much. Not much. No. Because they're still coming up with apologetics for it, too. You know, every time one of these things, basically what they're saying is, and they're doing the same thing that the church has always done. The church has always changed their position on something when they have no choice. They no longer have a choice.
External pressure.
Yep. Exactly. So they no longer have any choice to deny the Seer Stone story. And so they're changing their story and they're coming up with an apologetic for it. They did the same thing when they allowed African Americans to hold the priesthood in the 70s. You know, they came out with a revelation. Well, okay. That disagrees with the entire philosophy of how I was how I was raised and how my conception of God. My conception of God was that he's the same yesterday, today, and forever.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden, the African Americans can hold the priesthood when they couldn't before. So,
well, yeah, and you can find quotes from Brigham Young all over the place saying, if he's even got a drop of Negro blood, that is a quote, I read it just like a day or two ago. He shall not hold the priesthood, ever.
Yeah.
And that's how it's going to be, the end.
Exactly.
And it's like, okay, so either Brigham Young was a racist bigot and not speaking on behalf of God, the whole thing is bunk, or...
That can't be the case, that Brigham Young was just racist, and because the prophet will never lead the people astray.
Yeah, but then... I love the fact that they say that, but then at the same time, they try and say, well, the prophet's just a man and men are fallible. But then if you even suggest that the man is fallible, then, oh, well, you're excommunicated for not having proper faith in the prophet or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, losing faith in the prophet is an excommunicating offense.
Oh, yeah.
It's insane. It's insane. And, you know, you look back on it now as you're out and you're like, how did I ever believe this crap? But, you know.
Born and raised into it.
Yeah,
it just
exactly.
gets drilled into your head.
Indoctrinated and, from the very beginning.
Yeah. And I remember a lesson at church. I don't remember how old I was. I think I had just gotten in Young Women. So I think I was 12 or 13. And the teacher had said something about, well, we have to do what the prophet says, and it doesn't matter if we don't understand why. We don't. I mean, if he says tomorrow that you're not allowed to eat apples anymore, and this was the example that she gave, you know, if the prophet says that you can't eat apples anymore, and if you do, then that's a sin, just like, you know, all these others, like the word of wisdom, like whatever else, and it'll keep you from going in the temple and therefore keep you from, you know, redemption and whatever, then you don't eat apples anymore. You don't question why, you just follow because that's what the prophet was told.
It's hugely Orwellian, isn't it?
And, oh my gosh, it's just insane.
Yeah.
See, I felt the same way about being a woman. Like, you know, as I look back, it's like all these people were trying to convince me that I was a dude. And I was like, what the fuck? So I can kind of relate with some, being born with the wrong thing and then finding out that people are full of shit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's, yeah, I mean, I don't know. You can sit back and you can say, well, you know, society says to do this or society says to do that. And basically when you're talking about society, you're meaning the people that are around you. You know, but in all reality, we all have to find our own way and you know.
This is absolutely fascinating. It was kind of like when Bryce was on, like, because I've explained to Molly before, like, we didn't even know what Mormons were. And to find out that I was, what, like 20 minutes away from where it all started, or at least like where a lot of it happened in Palmyra, like, it's so unreal to me.
Okay. So you were pretty close to Palmyra.
Mormon Ground Zero.
Mormon Ground Zero, yes.
Yeah, I mean,
which today people would think of as Utah, but actually they don't realize that it actually started.
Oh, no, that's just the headquarters.
In the Northeast, yeah.
So it's fascinating because, you know, the first time I found out what a Mormon was when a girl was interested in me and someone pointed out. But to think that there's this religion that we don't hear anything about in that part of the country. And then my first time out to Utah is like, whoa, this is some heavy shit out here. So I love listening to these conversations with Molly and people who were sort of in it, because I was not even aware of this world. And I don't think a lot of Americans are.
And I, from an insider perspective, that's really weird to us.
Right.
That people don't know who we are, because, like, one of the questions that you get constantly, and Molly, you probably get this too, or have gotten this in the past, is, the whole Mormons aren't Christian thing.
Oh yeah. And honestly, even though I'm not part of the church anymore or anything like that, hearing that phrase still rubs me the wrong way. But yep. I mean, I am so fresh out of it too, so I might be hypersensitive, but
nope. I'm out of it now for 18 years, something like that. And it still bugs me today. I still will light somebody up with a quickness if they say that Mormons aren't Christian. Because it's a total misconception. And I think it's one of those things that other evangelical groups or whatever have decided to, you know, they've decided to bash Mormons because by saying that they're not Christian and all of that. And, you know, we just think it's common knowledge that people should know that, you know, Mormons are Christian. They do believe in the Bible. They do believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ, you know. It's just all the other shit that's really stupid about them.
Yeah, the way it was explained to me just recently, because I just had this conversation with somebody at work a couple months ago, and disclaimer, he's a Catholic, like, because someone else had said that, you know, I don't know how the subject came up, but something about, and I was like, yeah, so, you know, people say that Mormons aren't Christians, and he just got this look on his face, and he's like, well, you know, they're not. And I'm like, yeah, they are. They still believe in Jesus Christ. That is the quantifier of Christian, you know? It's just a follower of Christ. And exactly. And he was trying to say that, you know, because our version of the Godhead is different than their version of the Trinity, therefore it's not actually believing in Jesus Christ, it's something else. And I'm just like, okay.
Well, here's a question from someone who obviously has no stake in this game. Like, even though both of you are out of it, why is it something about which you're both still so passionate?
I think it's leftover passion from being in it. You know, it's one of those things that really bugged you growing up, especially if you grew up in a place that wasn't like, I guess, you know, Bryce is in Utah and he's surrounded by Mormons constantly. So it's kind of like common knowledge. But I grew up in Michigan. And so I grew up in a town that was about 85, maybe, well, probably 75% Seventh-day Adventist. So I was surrounded by people that were of other religions, other Christian religions. So you would get that all the time. Oh, well, Christians or Mormons aren't real Christians. Mormons don't, you know, and you would have to explain it constantly. It's one of those, like, it wasn't really a big problem to explain it, but it was just something that you had to explain over and over and over and over again. And it was, you know, it just grated on your nerves, you know?
Well, Tank, you're speaking to a trans girl who has to constantly validate her own identity and, you know, be like, yes, I am a woman too. So I can kind of appreciate it once again.
Exactly.
Oh, yep. I think Bryce words it pretty well in that even after you've left, like, that's still your culture, in a sense. That's how you were raised. And so, yeah, culturally Mormon, you know, so it's still just like...
It sticks with you.
It's still like seems to affect your identity even though you're not part of it anymore.
Yeah. And it does. There is a little bit of cognitive dissonance that happens when you find yourself defending Mormons.
I know, even when you're like, they are so full of crap.
Yeah. But... Yeah, because you're sitting there and somebody says something inaccurate about Mormons, like the whole polygamy thing. Oh, well, see, Mormons, don't they have a million wives?
That's the one that I was always asked as a kid. Well, how many wives does your dad have? How many moms do you have? This kind of thing. Yeah. And so I had to constantly explain. Yeah, my husband's over there dying laughing and trying to not make any noise. But... I had to constantly explain, well, no, that was done away with official declaration number one and blah, 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 before Mormon became a state. So, yep. Like, I was always explaining that.
Oh, yeah. And you find yourself now saying the same thing, you know, whenever somebody says something about Mormons and polygamy and everything like that, and you're like, okay, well, they don't practice polygamy anymore. And it gets under your skin because you're sitting there going, all right, I'm defending Mormons in a certain aspect, but at the same time, I really believe that they're full of shit, you know? So yeah, there is a little bit of frustration and cognitive dissonance there when you find yourself in that position where you have to defend Mormonism, but...
Yeah, it's just kind of odd, but you still find yourself doing it.
Yep.
Yeah, once again, I'm so fascinated by this. I always learn so much from these conversations, because there's this insular world that so many of us aren't aware of, and when, you know, I'm polyamorous anyway, so like that wouldn't bother me if, you know, y'all did have 1,000 wives, because like I'll be like, hey, I'll get some of that and pretend to be Mormon, both for the poly and for the free cookies, but you know,
the free cookies.
Because holy shit, can Molly make some cookies?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are my Mormon genes.
Yeah, we were talking about that the other day, actually, about the fact that, you know, Mormon girls are known for being really good at baking in general. You know, Mormon bake sales are like the best.
Teach me, senpai.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... It's what we do. Mm-hmm. That and pop out kids. But anyways.
Yeah. I'm one of 8. So, you know, I know that one from firsthand experience.
Yeah,
so that's I'm small family, right?
In Mormonism, yeah.
Sometimes, yeah. I'm 2nd of 5. My older sister has 7 of her own.
Oh, God.
So I'm like super behind because I've just got little fur babies. But.
Yeah, I don't have any myself, so, you know.
So what were some of the first things that got you doubting and some of the first external sources that really got you away from the whole Mormon-y stuff? I'm like, my brain's not working good today, so this is going to be fun.
Yeah. I guess what started it for me was I was preparing for my mission. And there were some circumstances that were going to put off my mission slightly for 6 months or so. And so in the meantime, I was told to take a temple preparation class to prepare myself for the temple endowment. Now, for those that don't know, Mormon temples are basically meeting houses that are closed to the public. You can only go into them if they, if you are a card-carrying Mormon who's been interviewed and found to be pure and things like that. You cannot, a member of the public cannot go inside after a temple has been consecrated.
Dedicated,
yeah. So I was preparing to go to the temple to receive my endowment, which is a high-level ordinance in the church, and they told me to go to temple preparation class. Now, in addition to going to seminary every day at a ridiculous hour of the morning.
So you had the early morning too.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
It's fun, isn't it? Mine was at 5:45.
Uh-huh.
Nobody should be awake at that time. It's miserable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, think adding 2 more hours of school every day, you know,
yeah.
Early in the morning. But so anyway, in addition to doing temple preparation and, you know, a bunch of my time being taken up with Boy Scouts and, you know, other church activities all over the place, now I'm adding on a temple preparation class that, if I remember right, it met on like Wednesdays and Saturdays or something like
Was
that.
Was it at the local institute?
No, actually mine was in our ward. It was a small class.
Okay.
So anyway, I was taking this temple preparation class, and the one thing that I was finding is that there was nothing different that I was learning there than I was learning in seminary. You know, they were telling me all the same things in order to prepare for the temple, which was pray and read your scriptures. Well, okay.
Well, that's the canned answers. That's the miracle Mormon fix-all for everything.
Yep, pray and read your scriptures. And so I'm like, okay, well, how is this a temple preparation class? Like, you're not telling me anything about the temple. You're not telling me anything that I haven't heard every day since I was friggin' 8 years old. You know, read your scriptures and pray. And what ended up happening is I ended up getting skeptical about the whole process a little bit. And I wanted to look into what actually happens in the temple. So I started asking questions of my bishop and, you know, people that I knew. And I got the stock canned answer, which was, we can't talk about it outside the temple. Yep. And I am not the type of person that you don't give an answer to, because if you don't give an answer, I'm not going to trust you. You know? So I started looking into, this was the early days of the internet, I guess. And I started looking into... you know, the temple ceremony, the temple endowment ceremony, and what it was about. And I ran across a couple of sites that explained the endowment ceremony in depth. And there were things in there, things that the church has since removed. Blood oaths were part of the ceremony. Basically, you would make an oath that you... would cut out your tongue and burn it to ashes and scatter it to the four winds if you ever revealed the secrets of the temple to anyone outside the temple. You would make a motion as if you were slitting your own throat or you were disemboweling yourself. These were all parts of a highly sacred Mormon ceremony. Now, from what I understand, the church has changed them since like 1977 or 78. They decided to do away with the blood oaths that were originally in the ceremony. But I didn't believe it at first because, again, I had been inoculated against anti-Mormon literature. And I was like, oh, this is just, you know, this is Satan trying to get into my mind. But I still had questions about it, so I went to my bishop with now very specific information. Like, okay, is this part of the ceremony? And I got the stock answer. we can't talk about it outside the temple. I'm like, okay, so you're not denying it. You're not telling me without a doubt that it doesn't exist this way. And so I went to friends of my father. I went to friends of other church members and things like that. I went to my own father. My own father also gave me the stock canned answer. I can't talk about it outside the temple. And when it came down to it, I finally found somebody who was able to confirm that, yes, this was part of the ceremony, but it is something that is no longer there. And I was like, why would it have ever been there in the first place? This is, according to the Doctrine and Covenants, this is one of the high-level ordinances that you have to have in order to get into heaven. So why would it change? Why would it become anything different than what it was originally, how it was instituted when Joseph Smith did it? Because, again, God doesn't change from, you know, yesterday, today, and forever. So it was one of those where I had to start looking at it a little more critically. And I went into the history of Joseph Smith and where the endowment ceremony came from, when it was first instituted, which was in Nauvoo. During the Nauvoo years, they instituted the endowment ceremony for the first time in the upper room of the, Bryce would know the name of it, but it was Joseph Smith's general store, basically. It happened, my research led to the little fact that it happened just a few months after Joseph Smith became a 33rd degree Freemason. And when you go back and you start to compare Freemason ceremonies to the endowment ceremony, you find that they are identical, right down to the fact that I actually work with a couple of Masons now. I was able to walk up and give one of the secret handshakes that they teach you in the temple to a 33rd degree Mason that I work with. And he's like, where did you learn that? You're not a Mason. I learned it from the temple endowment. So, you know, it's just one of those, you start to look at it and go, okay, well, he ripped the whole thing off. So if he ripped that off, what else did he rip off? And from there, it was like a journey into church history and Joseph Smith and who he was as a character. And it eventually led me to their Mormonism is not right.
Yeah, that's one thing that I never went through, because I never got my endowment and I never went on a mission or any of that. So the most that I know of the temple ceremony was there's someone who's like secret camera'd some of the ceremonies there in the temple and stuck it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
That is some fascinating crap to watch, and it's just like, what?
Oh, yeah. And,
I mean, they show the secret handshake through the curtain veil thing, and
my question always has been, why in the hell would God need a secret handshake to let you into heaven? All right, God knows your heart, and he knows you know what you've done in your life. He knows whether you're, you know, bound for heaven or bound for hell at any given point in time, right? So why is it that when I die, I have to be reduced to a little boy's treehouse to get into heaven?
I was thinking a fraternity, but that works just as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like you have to say the secret word and give the secret handshake to get into heaven. So it's like, you know, when I was a little boy, we had a treehouse and we wouldn't let any girls in, you know, and in order to make sure we didn't get any girls in, you know, there was like the secret handshake and the secret password. It's like, it's ridiculous.
See, and they won't let any girls in either unless
the husband gives the secret handshake. They have a husband to,
yeah. And I guess from what I was hearing, because I was listening to one of the one of the Exmo hangouts that Bryce had, where he had a few ladies on that had all left the church. And one of them had said, yeah, like, okay, so just because we don't believe that man is punished for Adam's transgression, that's fine and dandy for the guys, but as women, we're still punished because of Eve. And we're not allowed to talk to God, and our husbands have to do that for us, and we have to sit here and be quiet, and we have to wear our little head covering and our veil in the temple, and we can't, you know, go without that and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, what is this crap?
Yeah, so I guess the main takeaway there is that Mormonism is just as misogynistic as any other religion out there.
Oh, yeah, if not more so, because at least some of these other Christian denominations have female pastors and have females in the hierarchy, as opposed to Mormonism. We do have them in the Relief Society, Young Women's, and Primary, but they can't do anything without running it past the guys first.
Yeah. And the other Christian religions that now have female pastors and stuff like that, they had to bow to public pressure to get it done. So,
yeah.
Again, it comes back to that.
They've already done that.
Yeah, at least it comes back to that whole thing of, okay, if God was misogynistic back in the day, why is he, you know, slackening his standards now? You know, again, it's cherry picking the Bible, and you know, the Bible very clearly says that women shouldn't speak. You know, 1 Timothy 2:5.
Yeah, and then it's interesting because I've heard discussions saying, well, is the church ever going to change their stance on that? Are they ever going to ordain women? Don't you think that the social pressures will get to them just like it did with blacks in the priesthood? And aren't they going to finally have to reverse on that and ordain women? And given the fact that they've already excommunicated the lady who was, like, heading that movement,
right.
I forget her name, and given the attitude of the church, I'm like, no, they ain't gonna do that. I don't see them doing that for a long time.
They will eventually. They'll bow to public pressure. You know, they're already slackening. Well, they were slackening a little bit up until recently on LGBT couples and everything like that, until that recent edict that came out that basically condemned the children of LGBT couples to hell. You know.
How lovely.
That's the that was the catalyst for me having my name removed from the church, because I decided that I would no longer, even in name, be part of a hate group. And that's back in October, I think, that I heard that basically that LGBT couples would not. Or their children could not be baptized until they were no longer
reached
living.
18 and swore off their parents' lifestyle.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, I never felt the need to have my name officially removed from the records up until that point. I was like, it's not, you know, I won't be part of a hate group. And that's what the church has become recently. But it kind of ebbs and flows there. They were loosening up on LGBT couples there for a little bit. But then they came out with this thing. And I'm like, you got to be freaking kidding me. So a child who's 8 years old can make the decision to get baptized, unless, of course, their parents are gay.
Yeah. because, you know, they get infected with it. If they're born of a gay child, then they might spread it themselves, and then, you know, it'll infiltrate the holy temple thing, and the baptism won't go through, and then they'll it's herd mentality. It's herd mentality, and it's herd immunity. It's all those things, and that's why people like me exist, to spread that, to take down the holy purity of the Mormon Church.
It's so ridiculous, isn't it? It's just, it just makes you want to pull your hair out, because you're like, will these people ever come along? Will they ever, like, just look at the world and go, you know what? It takes all different types. And just friggin' let people live. Let people do what makes them happy. It's so ridiculous to me. And that was when the church decided that that any child was and it goes against the second article of faith, which is, I think it's the second. It's been so long, I don't remember. But, you know, we won't be punished. You know, all men will be punished for their own sins and not for Adam's transgression. Okay, so.
Yeah, I think that's the second.
Yeah, if you believe that being LGBT is a sin, okay? Even if you believe that, why would you punish the children for their parents' sin? It doesn't make sense.
God said so.
Yeah, but God also said that we would be, you know, held responsible for our own sins, you know.
You're taking things out of context and making too much sense, Tank. This isn't the place for this.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, is there has to be a certain amount of cognitive dissonance for that whole logic to continue and not bother you.
Yes, there always needs to be Tom and Cecil to keep everybody else from being bothered. I have to agree.
I keep saying cognitive dissonance just because, you know, it's one of my favorite shows.
Glory hole.
Well, we did evolve from filthy monkey men.
Oh, that's scathing. But
oh, is that scathing?
I got to say that a couple weeks ago.
My bad.
I sent them one. I don't know if they're going to use it anytime soon, but yeah.
Okay.
They forgot about mine twice, so I hope you have better luck than I do.
Well, if nothing else, I'll just remind him when he's recording with us. Oops, spoilers.
I always get confused with Cogdis is the...
Credulity is not a virtue.
Credulity is not a virtue. Yeah, okay. That's right. Because they got so many. Not to mention, I listen to like a million podcasts, so like...
I know those feels.
Yeah. There's one that I listen to, and their tagline is eat a bag of dicks. So
good call.
Nice.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
You can actually order a bag of gummies. Anyways, moving on. Now, one of my coworkers sent that to one of the other coworkers as a very smart alecky move. But anyways, okay.
Oh, I've done that too. I have sent people, I actually have sent people a bag of dicks before. So.
Fantastic.
It's the greatest gag gift ever.
So if people wanted to learn more about you and the work you do, how would they do that?
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
Oh.
Unless you're just a guy, like, we don't have to, like, promote your stuff. You know, we can just move along.
I'm actually just a guy.
Cool.
No, I'm just, you know, I mean... I don't really do any, you know, podcasting or anything like that at this point in time.
Sorry, it's a form question. Like we have to, it's compulsive. We have to answer that right. Shit.
Yeah, no. I reached out to Molly just to let her know that, you know, here in Central Pennsylvania there are groups for atheists, non-believers, things like that, because when I moved here, I moved here because my job moved here, and I had no friends. I felt completely isolated. And I felt that there were, I don't know, it got me depressed. I got, I had some real issues there when I first moved here, and I felt like I was totally alone living in friggin', you know, conservative hell.
Pennsyltucky.
Yeah, conservative hell is what I like to call it. So it's good to know that there are groups out there that, you know, you can join and you can have a little bit of fellowship, I guess would be the Mormon term for it. you know, from atheists, and because that it helped me out, you know, hanging out with people that I knew shared my values, and so that's how Molly and I started talking, was just through trying to let her know that, you know, even though you're in red state Pennsylvania, you are you're not alone.
Well, then there's a good thing. Like, if there are any other Exmos listening, looking for something like that, how would they find it?
Okay. In Pennsylvania here, we have the Pennsylvania Nonbelievers group. That's Pennsylvania, or it's PANonbelievers.org. And then there are also a couple of other Facebook groups, the Central Pennsylvania Secular Atheist Alliance, I think is the name of the other one. As far as ex-Mormon groups, I mean, you're going to find ex-Mormons across the country. And just look on Facebook, look on, you know, Google for ex-Mormon groups or atheist groups. There's anywhere you go in the country, I guarantee there's a non-believer group somewhere close enough to where you can, you know, you can find people that don't believe, that are struggling with religion, struggling to leave religion, and all of that. So,
yeah, and actually, since talking to Tank, I've checked the little meetup app, and the PA Nonbelievers have different meetings in different little towns around the central area here. So,
yeah. Yeah, there's
looking at going to one of those that I can actually go to on my off day. So,
yeah, it's an important message, because, I mean, being an atheist pretty much anywhere in the country, actually,
you're always going to be outnumbered.
Yeah. I mean, and if you're struggling to leave, if you're doubting your religion, you're struggling to leave religion, you know, those can be the loneliest years, especially for Mormons, because when you leave the LDS church, you leave behind your entire social structure. Your life, you don't even realize how tied up your life can be in Mormonism until you get out. And then you're like, wow, I'm completely alone.
Yeah. Even like me, when I haven't been going for a while, I haven't been attending, but that finality of it, knowing, okay, well, if something comes up, I don't have the home teachers anymore, I don't have my bishop anymore, I don't have the church employment office anymore, or any of that.
Exactly.
You traded all that for me, Molly.
Yep. Tote's worth it.
Yay!
Absolutely. It's definitely worth it to leave religion. In the long run, yes, it's one of the hardest decisions that you'll ever make. But it is so worth it, because your eyes are finally opened. You can rationally judge things from a non-judgmental perspective. You know, you can take on things logically and look at it from a whole new light.
Well, that was fun. I'm glad I got to eavesdrop on another Exmo conversation.
Yeah. So thank you, Tank, for joining us. This was good times.
You're welcome. I had a blast.
I really appreciate you reaching out to begin with. So awesome.
Cool.
But for now, that's it. So thank you, everybody, and good night. All right, this week we got a new patron, Jason. Thank you very much for your donation. If you want to be awesome like Jason, you can sponsor the show at patreon.com/doubtingdogma. If you can't afford to donate to the show but like what you hear, you can rate us on iTunes and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/doubtingdogma or on Twitter at doubtingdogma. Thank you.